Today is Friday, January 29th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, outcry as Poland begins its near-total ban on abortion.
Under the new rules, terminations will be permitted only in cases of rape and incest, and when the mother's life or health is endangered.
Also ahead, Somali parents say their children were tricked to fight for Eritrea.
The boy is missing, and I don't know if he's dead or alive.
Plus, how COVID-19 affects response to tropical diseases. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is access to abortion around the world. U.S. President Joe Biden has reversed several Trump administration healthcare policies, including one that restricted access to information about abortion both inside and outside the United States. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has this story on what Biden's actions may mean for women's reproductive rights around the world.
Clinics offering women's reproductive health services around the world can now provide information about abortion without fear of losing American funding. On Thursday, President Joe Biden signed an executive order to expand access to reproductive health care domestically and abroad, including rescinding the Mexico City policy, also known as the Global Gag Rule. The 1984 measure, supported by Republican presidents since Ronald Reagan, blocks U.S. federal funding for non-governmental organizations that provide abortion counseling or referrals, advocate to decriminalize abortion, or expand abortion services abroad.
Second order I'm signing relates to protecting women's health at home and abroad, and it reinstates the changes that were made, Title 10 and other things, making it harder for women to have access to affordable health care as it relates to their reproductive rights.
Previous Democratic presidents, including Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, have rescinded the rule, arguing that it deprives women and girls around the world of access to critical health care. Shina Goodman is the Director for Reproductive Health of the National Partnership for Women and Families.
Every time funding for reproductive health care services, including for abortion care, is cut or undermined, whether globally or domestically, people's health is at risk, people's economic security is at risk, and quite frankly, people's lives are at risk.
Biden also reversed the Trump administration's domestic abortion restrictions. Abortion is legal in the U.S., but has been more difficult to access under Trump. Mary Zock is the director of the Center for Human Dignity at Family Research Council, a pro-life organization.
It would be a wonderful step if we could actually limit that more, but unfortunately, under the Biden administration, I only see him pushing for more pro-choice legislation.
In another move to roll back Trump policies, Biden signed orders expanding access to the Federal Health Insurance Program, Medicaid, and the Affordable Care Act, the health insurance legislation also known as Obamacare.
Basically, the best way to describe them, to undo the damage Trump has done.
According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, roughly 15 million uninsured Americans could benefit from the expansion of these programs. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
And in Poland, Polish women with scheduled abortions are calling advice services in panic, activists said on Thursday, as Poland's government put into effect a ruling banning terminations of pregnancies with fetal defects. That amounts to a near-total ban on abortion in the country. Libby Hogan of Reuters has the story.
Thousands protested on the streets of Poland late on Thursday as the government began enforcing a ruling that amounts to a near-total abortion ban. It was first announced last October and bans almost all terminations of pregnancies, including those with fetal defects. That triggered a wave of massive protests that pressured the government to delay its start date. But on Thursday, as the government moved forward with the new rules, activists said they received calls from Polish women with scheduled abortions calling advice services in a panic. Head of the Federation for Women and Family Planning, Krystyna Kakpura.
I picked up about 10 of these calls during the night. Not all were from women. They were also from doctors and gynecologists asking if the ban is in force, what should they do?
She described it as a black night for women. Under the new rules, terminations will be permitted only in cases of rape and incest, and when the mother's life or health is endangered. Doctors performing illegal abortions in Poland face jail. Abortions Without Borders, a support group helping women get abortions abroad, had their phone number sprayed on walls after the first protests. They said they received at least 30 calls from women by noon on Thursday. Their message to women seeking help was that they were not alone, and they would try and help as many callers as possible. Meanwhile, conservatives who supported the new limitations rejoiced, arguing that they had finally secured equal human rights for unborn children. MP Maria Kroska, who supported the ban, said it was better to, quote, have 10 children on your arm than one on your conscience.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan. Somali youths recruited to work in Qatar have instead been forced into military service in Eritrea, several parents have alleged. Saraya Ali of Reuters has more.
Khadija Ahmed thought her only son was going to work as a guard as part of Qatar's 2022 World Cup preparations. But at her home in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, she now fears the job was a trick and that the 16-year-old may have been forcibly recruited to fight for Eritrea, one of the world's most secretive nations.
The boy is missing, and I don't know if he's dead or alive. Their father, a senior military officer, died for his country.
Other families have similar stories, and the apparently secret recruitment of youths for Eritrea is stirring anger in Somalia. Last week, protests were sparked after the former deputy director of Somalia's National Intelligence Security Agency, Abdisalam Gulid, said Somalis had been sent by Eritrea to fight in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region.
I don't have an accurate number, I don't have any evidence, but I do have a reliable source who told me the number of Somali soldiers, the casualties, are about 370, and other 100 numbers of are died in a battlefield.
He provided a list of names which Reuters was unable to independently verify that he said was given to him by an Ethiopian official. Mohamed Dahir believes his two sons may have been killed in Tigray, where Ethiopia's government has been fighting rebellious regional forces. He says he can't sleep, worrying about his children and not knowing if they are dead or alive. A regional security analyst said around 1,000 Somalis had been recruited and taken to Eritrea, with some having now returned, some unreachable, and others still in Eritrea, a country often referred to as the North Korea of Africa. Somalia's government did not respond to requests for comment on its apparent role in the recruitment, though spokesman Mohamed Ibrahim said no Somalis had been sent to Ethiopia. Eritrean Information Minister Yemane Meskel said the claims were ludicrous and that there is massive disinformation floating around.
Thanks to Saraya Ali of Reuters for that story. Now we go to Geneva, where United Nations human rights officials are alarmed by Sri Lanka's lack of accountability for past crimes. Officials have warned it could result in a resurgence of the same kind of violations and abuse that triggered armed conflict in the past in Sri Lanka. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Sri Lanka's 26-year-long civil war with the Tamil Tigers ended nearly 12 years ago. Since then, UN officials say successive governments have done nothing to redress the population's grievances, hold perpetrators of crimes accountable, and provide justice and reparations to the victims of the war. A hard-hitting report issued by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights finds impunity for grave human rights violations and abuses by all sides is more entrenched than ever. Human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA her agency has documented many cases of extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary detentions, and other violations of international humanitarian law.
There have been many commissions of inquiry that were appointed by successive governments to look into the kinds of grave human rights violations that had been committed, but none of them have yielded any concrete results. This current government has moved beyond merely a slow process of accountability to active political obstruction of accountability.
The report documents a pattern of intensified surveillance, harassment, and intimidation of civil society organizations, human rights defenders and victims, lawyers, and journalists. Of particular concern, it notes, is the increasing marginalization of Tamil and Muslim minorities. Authors of the report warn divisive and discriminatory rhetoric from the highest state officials risks generating further polarization and violence. Shandasani says it is troubling to see many of the officials who are part of the current administration were in power when the conflict was ending and many atrocities committed.
Since last year, the president has appointed at least 28 serving or former military and intelligence personnel to key administrative posts. So these are people who remain in power. And what is really worrying is that some of these officials were actually implicated in alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity during the final years of the conflict.
Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says the Sri Lankan government has demonstrated its inability or unwillingness to hold anyone accountable. Therefore, she is urging governments to investigate and prosecute alleged perpetrators of crimes in their national courts under an accepted system of international justice. Shandasani says the Sri Lankan government was given the report before publication. A Sri Lankan official told Reuters the accusations in the report regarding the government's actions are wrong. Shandasani says some of the government's extensive comments have been incorporated into the report, which will be formally presented to the Human Rights Council on February 24th. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA. A Dutch appeals court ruled today that the Nigerian subsidiary of the Royal Dutch Shell Oil Company was responsible for oil pipeline leaks in the Niger Delta. The court ordered Shell to pay unspecified damages to farmers. The case was filed in 2008 by four farmers and the environmental group Friends of the Earth, seeking reparations for lost income from contaminated land and waterways in the Niger Delta region. Friends of the Earth hailed the ruling, saying, quote, "It means people in developing countries can take on the multinationals who do them harm," end quote. And the United Nations and Western governments voiced alarm today over threats by Myanmar's military that have stirred fears of a coup in the aftermath of the country's November election. Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy won a resounding victory in the poll, but the army has said the vote was fraudulent and said it would take action if complaints about the election are not addressed. The Electoral Commission denies any fraud. An army spokesman on Tuesday declined to rule out the possibility of seizing power. Britain is banning direct passenger flights from the United Arab Emirates from today, shutting down the world's busiest international airline routes from Dubai to London. Britain said it was adding the UAE, Burundi, and Rwanda to its coronavirus travel ban list because of worries over the spread of a more contagious and potentially vaccine-resistant COVID-19 variant, which was first identified in South Africa. On its website, Emirates Airlines said it would suspend all UK passenger flights when the ban takes effect. Etihad Airways said it would only suspend flights to Britain, with those from the UK remaining unaffected. In a statement, Dubai Airport advised those booked on flights due to arrive in Britain after the ban not to go to the airport and instead to contact their airline.
This is Science in a Minute.
There was some excitement in the scientific community last September when a study announced the discovery of phosphine in the clouds of Venus. Here on Earth, this molecule is only made by either industrial means or by microbes that flourish in oxygen-free environments. The discovery suggested to some that the detection of the molecule could be an indication of microbial life in the clouds of a planet described by some as hellish. Researchers at the University of Washington say they reinterpreted the same data used in the previous study. In a new paper, the researchers say their findings suggest that it was actually sulfur dioxide and not phosphine that was detected. Study co-author Victoria Meadows says that sulfur dioxide is the third most common chemical compound in the atmosphere of Venus and not a sign of life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Hundreds of immigrants lined up to become some of the first U.S. farm workers to receive COVID-19 vaccines during a vaccination event in Riverside County, California. More with VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
For the first time, the workers took some time off from picking produce at Tudor Ranch in the western U.S. state of California to get vaccinated. Executive Director George Tudor says farm workers and their well-being are critical to the United States.
I think it's evident. You look in your refrigerator, you go to the grocery store. Everybody needs food, and it comes from someplace, and it comes from these fields, and it comes from these people's hard work.
A sentiment echoed by Riverside County Public Health Director Kimberly Sarwatari.
We know that this is an essential workforce. We know that they are critical to the food supply chain across the country, so we want to make sure that they're protected.
But debunking the myths about the COVID-19 vaccine has been an important component of the vaccination effort, says Luz Gallegos, executive director at TODEC, a farm worker advocacy group.
And we knew as an organization that it was going to be very difficult for our community to get a vaccine because they continue hearing myths. So we started 3 months ago with our community education, going to the fields, talking to the workers, letting them know what the vaccine was.
Farm worker Ezequiel Hernandez says at times he believes his health is not a consideration for most people. This effort has certainly changed that belief.
Something like that, you know, like somebody cares. No, sometimes you feel like, oh, nobody cares about me, but now we demonstrate somebody cares about farmers, and it's nice.
Hernandez says he's happy to have received the vaccine and feels great.
That's fantastic, you know. Some people give free. Some people don't like it, say maybe, you know, something happened, but I'm not. Don't be afraid. I'm okay.
As of Wednesday, California has over 3.1 million COVID-19 confirmed cases, resulting in at least 38,000 deaths, which constitutes a nearly 2% increase from the day prior, according to official state data. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
A World Health Organization-led team of experts investigating the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic began meeting with Chinese scientists on Friday, and the WHO said the group plans to visit labs, markets, and hospitals in Wuhan. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
A World Health Organization-led team of experts finally began its fact-finding mission in Wuhan, China on Friday, as they investigate the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. They kicked off meetings with Chinese leaders now that the mission's members are out of quarantine. And over the next 2 weeks, the WHO said the group plans to visit labs, markets, and hospitals in the city where the deadly virus first emerged in late 2019. The team will visit the seafood market at the center of the initial outbreak, as well as the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The origins of the COVID-19 pandemic have been highly politicized. A member of the WHO team told Reuters on Thursday that the mission's success depends on access to the relevant sources, and that this can only be possible with the support from China. China's initial delay of the mission drew rare public criticism from the WHO chief. It's also been plagued by lingering concerns over access and bickering between China and the United States. The U.S. has accused China of hiding the extent of the initial outbreak and criticized the terms of the WHO visit, under which Chinese experts conducted the first phase of research. Meanwhile, China has pushed the idea that the virus existed abroad before it was discovered in Wuhan. State media have cited the virus's presence on imported frozen food packaging, and scientific papers there say it had been circulating in Europe in 2019. The WHO has sought to manage expectations for its investigation, with Emergency Chief Mike Ryan saying earlier this month that there are no guarantees of answers.
Thanks to Gloria So of Reuters for that report. International humanitarian organization Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is worried that worldwide attention on COVID-19 has shifted focus from tropical diseases that affect over 1.7 billion people, mostly in poorer countries. In a new report, the group called for an improved global response to prevent further deaths and disability. For more International Editions, Chinedu Ofor spoke with Marguerite Denboer, who is an MSF advisor.
Resources have been diverted from these neglected tropical diseases to COVID-19. There were already so few resources for these diseases. And also, certain interventions have had to be stopped, such as mass drug administration, with which you can prevent certain of these diseases. Those interventions had to be stopped, and that probably will have negative consequences for the prevalence of these diseases.
What are some of these diseases, and how dangerous are they?
There's many neglected tropical diseases, and the WHO has designated 20 of them as priority ones, so ones that really urgently need support. Many of those diseases are deadly, not all of them, but the ones that MSF works in are mostly the deadly diseases that are quite difficult to diagnose and treat because there hasn't been enough investment in finding easy oral treatments and rapid diagnostic tests. And also these diseases, they affect people that live in very remote or even conflict-affected areas. So there's not much attention for them.
And how widespread can these diseases be if not tackled properly, as you are advocating?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, because what we've seen is actually a lot of progress in the last decades, even though there are still many gaps. But a disease like sleeping sickness that we are treating in MSF, only a century ago, it affected hundreds of thousands of people. And even in 1 year, 500,000 people died from an outbreak. And now, last year, there were only about 1,000 reported cases. So this means this is a message of hope. It means you can actually control or even eliminate these diseases. I think I will name the ones that we as MSF work in. We work in three deadly parasitic diseases, which are sleeping sickness, visceral leishmaniasis, and Chagas disease. Then we work in snake bite envenoming, which is a disease that causes more death and disability than any other of the neglected tropical diseases. And we work in two diseases that primarily affect, in the first instance, the skin. That's cutaneous leishmaniasis and NOMA, which is a bacterial infection of the oral cavity that also kills many of its victims.
In concluding your report, what are you asking for?
Well, what we want is much more investment in these NTDs because they can be overcome. We want more money for rolling out care for all people affected, but we also want more research and development that will result in easy diagnostic tests and oral treatments that can be employed anywhere so that any patient can have access to these and survive these diseases.
Are you worried that because most of these diseases are in the poorer nations or poorer countries of the world, that this might affect your call for more investment?
I think that there's two things. Many of these countries that are coping with these diseases have actually made economic progress in the last decades. So they are now able to contribute more themselves. And also in the last decades, we have seen that there have been significant contributions from the more developed, more wealthy countries to those diseases. So what we need is just continued commitment, focus on the most forgotten patients.
That was Marguerite Denboer, an MSF advisor, speaking to International Editions' Chinedu Ofor. And that's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, our colleague Chinedu Ofor, and managing editor Kate Pounds Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great weekend.
Here is what's coming up on Africa News tonight.
A medical trial in Britain shows its coronavirus vaccine is almost 90% effective against COVID-19. And the Nigerian subsidiary of Royal Dutch Shell has been found responsible for oil leaks in the Niger Delta. All these and more on VOA's African News tonight.